Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Crunch Time here on your hometown radio station, Eagle Country 99.3 Crunch Time, a service of Ortho Cincy Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, the orthopedic authority here in Lawrenceburg and throughout the tri-state. Whether it's everyday injuries, sports-related injuries, the everyday Joe, or the high school athlete, reach out to Ortho Cincy for all of your orthopedic needs, orthocincy.com. I'm Double T Travis there. Thank you for joining me on this Monday, April 5th, another edition of Crunch Time, 30 minutes of nonstop sports conversation. And we want to start by talking again about young Mason Paris. I know it seems like we talk about him quite often, but when you're, you know, doing as well as he is in the world of wrestling, your name's going to come up quite a bit, and the list of accolades and honors continues to get longer for Mason Paris. Obviously, a Lawrenceburg native, most people familiar with him by now, but he has made his first U.S. senior national team on Saturday, competing at the U.S. Olympic team trials in Fort Worth, Texas. He placed third in the 275-pound freestyle division. This was not easy for Paris to qualify for the national team, as he did lose his opening bout, but kudos to Mason for getting right back up there on that horse and winning his next three matches, three consecutive consolation wins to earn a spot on that senior national team, as they're going to be preparing for the 2021 Tokyo Olympics. Now, this doesn't guarantee that Mason is going to be a part of the Olympics, but certainly going to be on the national team training, and it's a big moment for him in his wrestling career. But he had a very impressive win in this Olympic team trial. Actually took down a former two-time NCAA champion by the name of Tony Nelson, and he won with a 6-3 decision, perhaps his most impressive win there in Fort Worth, Texas. So congratulations to Mason Paris, moving on to be a part of his first U.S. senior national team. Awesome, awesome stuff there. Just a junior at the University of Michigan, certainly is going to have more opportunities to be on this national team, and at least one more opportunity to become a Big Ten champion and maybe even a national champion as a senior at the University of Michigan. All right, moving on to the next topic. Going to talk a little high school baseball and softball. The 2021 season starting to heat up. Plenty of action over the weekend, and one of the best team performances came from the Harrison Wildcats, downing the Lawrenceburg Tigers 16-3. They scored 12 runs in the third inning, and their starting pitcher, Carter Daniel, well, he struck out 11 in that contest. A great win there for Harrison. Jackson Dell with an impressive win over the weekend as well. A 10-0 blanking of Morristown. TJ Minchhoffer, Cameron Gell knocking in two runs each. Ryan Wilson, Brady Borgman, and Justin Sweeney each had an RBI as well. And Gell picked up the win on the mound to start Jackson Dell off on the right foot. And then East Central, they were off to a good start. A little bit of a setback against Shelbyville. They were 11-9 losers in this game. Ryan Bavard had a nice game, 2-for-3 with three RBIs. Eli Aston, Reed Cleary, and Dean Davis also had an RBI in that game. But a tough loss for East Central. Sure, they'll rebound. Very, very talented team out there this year. In softball, a couple scores from Friday. Switzerland County knocked off Lawrenceburg 7-4, and Hagerstown got the best of Franklin County 8-7. On Saturday in baseball, Franklin County won a doubleheader against Richmond, won the first game 9-8, turnaround, put up 14 runs in game two, winning that one 14-2. I also want to talk about Batesville. What a performance this was on Saturday against Rising Sun. They win 12-0. Travis Lecker, Calvin Sherwood, Riley Zink all had two RBIs each, but it was Jacob Meek and Jack Grunkmeyer who combined to throw a one-hitter in this game. Peyton Creech, the only hit for the Shiners, so a nice win from the Batesville Bulldogs. And their softball team showed out well against Rising Sun as well, winning a doubleheader. They took down Rising Sun 10-2 in Game 1. Kylie Laker and Sydney Schaefer had three RBIs each in that game. And then in Game 2, this was the game of the weekend in high school sports. Batesville 17, Rising Sun 13. Paige Oldham went 4-for-5 from the plate, knocking in seven runs. She also scored four times for the Bulldogs. Emma Belter, Sarah Ripberger, and Samantha Kessens with two RBIs each. Rising Sun, they were led by Cora Poling. She had six RBIs in this game, and Lindsay Montgomery knocked in an additional five runs for the Lady Shiners, who on any other day would have been a winner, scoring 13 runs. But Batesville outdoing them 17-13 in the game of the weekend in softball. Well, actually, let's take that back for just a second, because South Dearborn played a heck of a game on Saturday as well. They came from behind to beat Cambridge City Lincoln 9-8. The Lady Knights trailed this game 8-4, but in the sixth inning, the Lady Knights had a four-run sixth inning, tying the game at 8 apiece, and then the Knights would score in the bottom half of the seventh to win in walk-off fashion. So South Dearborn Lady Knights off to a fantastic start in softball. Now, there's a few topics I want to get to in high school basketball as we move forward here on Crunch Time, presented by OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, the orthopedic authority here in Lawrenceburg and across the tri-state. Check them out, orthosensi.com. And this is a story that I'm very happy to pass along. My old freshman basketball coach and even an assistant on the JV and varsity when I played at Lawrenceburg High School has been recognized for his many years of service and contributions to the Lawrenceburg High School boys basketball program. You probably know the name Steve Bradley. He's been around these parts for a long, long time. Went to Lawrenceburg, starred as an athlete there, has worked as a probation officer for 30 years here in these parts, and has been a part of the Lawrenceburg High School basketball program for 26 years. And he was recently awarded with the Point Guard College Transformational Coach Award, which comes from the Indiana Basketball Coaches Association. Only four individuals received this award this year. And Coach Bradley was nominated by the current Lawrenceburg head coach, varsity head coach Brad Cutter. And, you know, he just has had such a major impact on the Tigers program. And Coach Cutter gave us a quote for this particular story, saying Coach Bradley's greatest quality is that he always finds a way for every player to help the team. Steve is great at coaching each player individually and focusing on how to make it a positive experience for them. His positive approach and love for coaching our student athletes is contagious. He is great at finding the good things from a defeat and the good things from a player who may not be able to contribute as much as another. And I have experience playing for Coach Bradley. I loved playing for Coach Bradley as a freshman. He really did instill a lot of confidence in me, which propelled me to go up, play some JV ball as a freshman, and then as a sophomore, being on the JV team to start the season, worked my way up to playing varsity basketball as a sophomore, and I couldn't have done it without Coach Bradley and his tutelage at the freshman level, and then being there on the bench, too, for the JV games, the varsity games, over the final 3 years of my career. His advice, his knowledge of the game, his attention to detail, all that stuff was invaluable, and I don't know that he'll ever really know how appreciative I am of his coaching and what he meant to me in my high school basketball career. And I don't know if I've ever said this a bunch, but I absolutely loved playing high school basketball as a youngster, going and watching the Tigers play and watching my brother play before me. All I ever wanted to do was play varsity basketball for the Lawrenceburg Tigers, and I was able to do that for 3 years. And Coach Bradley was a big part of that. And I just appreciate him so much, and he is so deserving of this award. Not only me, but the countless numbers of players that have come through the program, and Coach Bradley has been able to coach on the freshman team, and then so on and so forth, moving up in the ranks throughout their high school career. But he put out some quotes in this story as well, and kind of said something along the lines that he kind of stopped focusing so much on the winning many, many moons ago, and just wanted to make freshman basketball an enjoyable experience for those that were coming through the program. Because a lot of times when you get 10, 12, 15 kids playing freshman, you might get a portion of those kids playing at the varsity level. Not everybody continues to stick with basketball, so it's meant to be an enjoyable experience. But ever since he kind of took the focus off of winning, he hasn't had a losing season. And I tell you what, we did not have a losing season when I was a freshman, and that was back in, I think, like 2003, 2004, if my math is correct. So that just goes to show you how many years in a row the freshman team at Lawrenceburg has had a winning season, and a lot of those players going on to star on the varsity level as well. So just an awesome thing to see Coach Bradley get this award. And then not only that, when Coach Cutter passed this news along to me so that I could share it here at Eagle Country 99.3, there was a lot of great quotes from people that have been around Coach Bradley that respect him greatly. And reading those quotes from the likes of Aaron Cornett, who's a former player at Lawrenceburg, has kids that are student athletes now at Lawrenceburg, him talking about his experience playing with under Coach Bradley, having his kids being coached by Coach Bradley, head football coach Ryan Kaniga, who has been a part of the basketball program at times, coaching alongside Coach Bradley, talking about how much he respects him as a coach and a person. Former Lawrenceburg Athletic Director Joe Vogel saying some nice words about Coach Bradley, and even the East Central Boys Varsity Basketball Coach David Disbro, who was known Coach Bradley for many, many of years. They played against each other as Disbro was a South Dearborn grad, Coach Bradley at Lawrenceburg, and then they have coached against each other as well for several years. Coach Scalf, an assistant currently at Lawrenceburg, talking a little bit about Coach Bradley as well. So those quotes and, reading about the respect that those individuals have for Coach Bradley just speaks in volumes to what kind of person we are talking about here. And just so happy to pass along this news. I think the world of Coach Bradley, and I congratulate him for winning this award. It is very, very much deserved. And hopefully you got a lot of years left in the tank coaching over there at Lawrenceburg High School. Speaking of Lawrenceburg High School, Lawrenceburg, along with Milan, their gyms were actually nominated by Visit Indiana and the Indiana High School Basketball Hall of Fame as the 68 teams that were going to be the field of nominees to determine who has the best gym in the state of Indiana. This was all kind of coinciding with the NCAA men's basketball tournament, and the votes are in, and we're unfortunately going to tell you that Lawrenceburg and Milan did not make the top 10. There were 67,000 votes cast in this particular field of nominees, and it was a familiar foe and a regional team that actually had what was voted upon as the best high school basketball gym in Indiana, and it was the Connersville Spartan Bowl, named the best high school gym in the state. The top three rounded out by Newcastle Fieldhouse, of course, the largest high school gymnasium in the country, and then you had West Vigo's Gym Man Green Dome were the top three, and we do have a link to the top 10 rankings over at EagleCountryOnline.com. We thought this was a fun story when it came out. It was nice that we had a local tie with Lawrenceburg and Milan being nominated among the field of 68, but Connersville Spartan Bowl taking the most votes as the best high school gym in the state. And we've actually talked to some of the student athletes that play, boys and girls basketball. And when we ask them what their favorite gym is, oftentimes the student athletes will say Connersville, or at least mention that gymnasium amongst the gyms that they love to play in. So no surprise there that Spartan Bowl was voted the best high school gym in the state. Now, sticking with the basketball theme, we have a recent commitment that we want to pass along, and you might have saw this story over at EagleCountryOnline.com, but South Dearborn senior Isaiah Jefferson going to be calling New Albany, Indiana home for the next few years as he has committed to Indiana University Southeast. So Jefferson, if you don't know his story, just briefly, started his high school career at South Dearborn, played varsity as a freshman, ended up going to Salem for a couple years, returned to South Dearborn as a senior, and now he is going to be off to IU Southeast. He averaged close to 10 points per game this year. Can rebound, block shots. He's got great length. He can shoot outside, score inside. Kind of got a little bit of an all-around game. He's a really nice player. I've enjoyed covering Isaiah over his couple years at South Dearborn, and he ended his high school career with 891 career points, so that's getting it done, playing 4 years of varsity basketball. We wish Isaiah nothing but the best moving forward. Good luck to you. Hopefully you do some really great things at IU Southeast, and we will certainly be tracking your progress over the next few years. So Isaiah Jefferson, another young man from Eagle Country, going to go on to play college ball. Awesome news there. And that's not it for South Dearborn. They had another student-athlete announce their college decision, as Gracie Collins is going to play soccer at Mount St. Joseph's University, and she was a four-year letter winner herself, a member of the Lady Knights team that went to the semi-state back in 2019. What a team that was. But yes, very good soccer player, but also very good in the classroom, twice earning ISCA, Academic All-State. She ranks third in her class and is a Merit Scholar Award Award recipient. She has 10 total varsity letters, also starring in track and field and swimming. And at the Mount, Collins plans to enroll in the pre-physical therapy program. So she has definitely got a bright future, going to be able to play soccer, the game she loves, for a few more years. And obviously a very good student, and is going to be in a great program there at Mount St. Joseph's, and not too far down the road. So the family can come see her play soccer and all that good stuff. So again, awesome stuff. We love seeing these commitments here in Eagle Country, and Gracie Collins, just the latest to go to Mount St. Joseph's University. You can read more over at EagleCountryOnline.com. Few more topics to get to on this Monday, April 5th, to round out the show. We'll call this Double T's Takes, as we are venturing a little bit outside of the high school sports realm over the past couple of weeks here on Crunch Time, and we'll do so moving forward. Talking a little Reds, we'll have some Bengals notes in there. Also going to talk a little college basketball to round out the show, but the Reds getting their season started, and they played really, really well over the weekend, taking 2 out of 3 from the Cardinals. Now, if we go back to opening day on Thursday, wasn't a great opening day for the Reds as they welcome fans back to Great American Ballpark, 30% capacity, did not have the opening day parade, so it didn't necessarily feel like opening day, and it wasn't a great one for the Reds, specifically Luis Castillo, who only pitched into the fourth inning, gave up 8 hits and 8 earned runs, and the shocking stat for me was he did not have one single strikeout the entire game. That's just kind of crazy considering how good of stuff Luis Castillo has. We have seen him from time to time get roughed up, but for the large picture, if you've watched his career, he has been a really, really solid pitcher for the Cincinnati Reds and arguably an ace on this team. Now, when Sonny Gray comes back, that's where the argument comes in. Sonny might say, hey, that's going to be my spot. I'll be the number one guy. You can slide into the 2-hole and we'll be just fine at the top of the rotation without Trevor Bauer, who's already starring for the LA Dodgers. We're not going to talk any further on that because it's kind of depressing. But yeah, Luis Castillo gets roughed up on opening day. If he pitches just a little bit better, you think the Reds probably have a chance to win this game. They did score 6 runs. They chased Jack Flaherty from the game in the fourth inning. He's a very good pitcher, obviously starting opening day for St. Louis. So if you look at the Reds and their batting average from last year in that 60-game shortened season, they only hit .212 as a team. They were the worst batting average as a team in the league last year in that shortened season, but they have worked on things in the offseason. They're no longer worried so much about the home run ball. They want to hit line drives. That has been the focus in the offseason, and we've seen that come to fruition early on in the year. Now, Castellanos, Suarez, Moustakas, Votto, they got off to a good start. They all knocked in runs on opening day. Scored 6, wasn't good enough to get the win. But hey, you know what I'm saying here. On any given day, the Reds score 6 runs. You think the likelihood that they win that game is going to be pretty high. That was just an off day for Luis Castillo. And at the end of the day, I know everybody wants to see the Reds win opening day. It's an unofficial holiday here. It's one of the biggest days in the sports calendar for Cincinnati sports fans, and you want to see the home team win on opening day. But in the larger scheme, you want to see the Reds win the World Series, make the playoffs first, obviously, and then make that run. They haven't won a World Series since 1990. That's long overdue for this rich and proud franchise, which was the first ever pro baseball team. So more so than anything, take opening day out of it, and now let's go chase a National League Central championship, a pennant, and then hopefully a World Series. Now, is it too early to start talking about those type of goals? I don't necessarily think so, because every team in the league right now has that same goal until they're mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. And what I saw from the Reds at the plate over the weekend, if they can keep this up even halfway, you would think that they're going to be sticking around in the National League Central and give themselves a shot to make the playoffs. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that as we roll on talking about the Reds. Now let's jump ahead to Game 2 on Saturday. They had Friday off, and the Reds' bats, they stayed hot from Thursday, and they win this game 9-6. They fell behind 1-0 in the second inning, and well, a 6-run third inning propelled the Reds into the lead. They added 2 in the fourth and never looked back. Tyler Mahle was pretty good in this game in his first start on the season. Went 5 innings. He did give up 2 earned runs, 2 solo home runs to Paul DeJong, one of the best shortstops in the National League. But 9 strikeouts for Mahle, walked 2 batters. Pretty good effort from a guy that is going to play a pivotal role in in this team's success this year. Now, when Sonny Gray, Michael Lorenzen come back, the Reds' rotation is going to look a lot better than what it does on paper to start the season, and Mally's going to be a big part of what they hope to accomplish this year. But the bats kept rolling. Everybody was getting in on the act. Boy, you had 10 Reds with at least one hit in this game. Barnhart had a two-run homer. Tyler Naquin knocked in two runs. Jonathan India with an RBI. Moustakas, Suarez. The bats were rolling here on a Saturday, but so was the intensity between these two teams, because if you were watching or maybe listening on the radio, Nick Castellanos got drilled with a fastball, a first-pitch fastball in the middle innings, took exception to it, took his base, ended up being on third base when there was a pass ball, and he scores play at the plate with the pitcher that actually hit him. He stood up over top of that pitcher and kind of had some choice words for him, and that, well, caused the benches to clear. And a little heated moment there. No punches were thrown. Castellanos was ejected from the game, but boy, did he come back in grand fashion on Sunday. A three-run home run in the, I believe, fourth inning to break this game open 4-1, and the Reds didn't look back from there. 12-1, they take down the Cardinals on Sunday, winning the series 2-1. And I got to give big credit to Nick Castellanos for kind of sparking this two-game winning streak to win this series against the Cardinals. He talked about the altercation that happened on Saturday after the game, and he said, listen, I've been losing my entire career. He's been with the Tigers, the Cubs, and now the Reds, and he's sick of it. He doesn't want to lose anymore. He certainly didn't want to start the season 0-2 or 0-3. So he's out there and playing his behind off and swinging a hot bat, too. He was fantastic in spring training, and he brought that hot bat back up to Cincinnati because he is off to a terrific start for this team. And again, last year, Castellanos, Mike Moustakas come over as free agents, and you're thinking these guys are really going to bolster the Reds' attack, and they just didn't hit the ball well in this COVID season, the 60-game season, whatever the reasoning behind it, just did not acclimate well to Cincinnati last year. But now that they've had a full spring training, they had that shortened season last year to get acclimated with their teammates, they're starting to feel a little bit more comfortable here in Cincinnati, and it's showing, and the whole lineup has really been great over the first three games. Hopefully they can keep those hot bats going against Pittsburgh starting this evening. But among those hot bats, Tyler Naquin, who they signed as a free agent as just an extra outfielder. He's getting some additional playing time right now with Shogo Akiyama out, and Nick Senzel picked up a knock in the first game of the season with a diving catch in center. So Naquin hits a home run yesterday. He's got three RBIs in this game. Blandino comes off the bench, two RBIs. The young guys, Stevenson, Jonathan India knocking in runs as well. A complete effort from the Reds on Sunday, winning 12-1. And Jeff Hoffman, who came over in the Robert Stevenson trade with the Colorado Rockies in the offseason, he picks up a start with Lorenzen and Gray on the shelf. He goes five innings, strikes out six, gave up one run. And then TJ Antone, Carson Fulmer, Sal Romano, they come in for the last four innings and shut the door, didn't give up any runs. Only gave up two hits, walked a couple batters, so the Reds bullpen even looking pretty decent here early on as they start the season 2-1. Now, it is way early. This is going to be a regular 162-game season for the Reds, but they're 2-1. They're at the top of the National League Central with the Chicago Cubs. Good to say they're tied for first place, even though it's only after three games, but only two teams have scored more runs than the Reds through the first weekend of the season. The Astros, a league-leading 35 runs. They've played four games, however. And then the Kansas City Royals with 28. Reds scoring 27 runs in three games. Gave up 18. That's a plus-9 run differential. So that is where we want to see the Reds continuing to score runs and holding teams down, winning ball games, and having fun doing it. So very exciting first three games for the Reds. They got the Pittsburgh Pirates coming into town. They're not expected to be very good this year, so this is a series that the Reds should win. It doesn't always work out that way in the game of baseball, but hopefully they're able to knock down at least two out of three here, win the first two series of the season before they go on a road trip, and they'll be feeling good about themselves. I believe it was last week where I said the Reds do have a pretty strong schedule to start here in April. The first month of the season is always a big one in baseball, and you at least have to tread 500 to keep yourself really in those division races, especially with a division like they have, the Cubs, Brewers, and Cardinals. seemingly every year have a really, really good team. This division could go any way. I think you take the Pirates out of the equation, the other four teams, any one of them could win it. But if you really struggle out of the gate, you put yourself behind the eight ball, it is tough to catch up sometimes. So let's hope that the Reds continue up with the hot bats, get some good pitching from some of these guys like Jose De Leon and Wade Miley and Jeff Hoffman until Sonny Gray and Michael Lorenzen can get themselves back in the rotation. And not only that, the Reds still playing without Shogo Akiyama. They're waiting for Nick Senzel to get fully healthy. If this team has their full complement of players, they can be a team that can contend in the National League. And I want to give a shout-out to Jonathan India, who is a rookie starting at second base. He was the first Reds rookie to start on opening day since Chris Sabo did it many moons ago, and the first rookie to start at second base since Pete Rose did it way back when. And Jonathan India has come up to the big leagues, and not only has he made all the plays at second base playing a good defense, he has hit the ball really well so far in his early career, and he's adding a little something different to this Reds batting order, and I really like his potential, and hopefully this is not just a flash in the pan for Jonathan India, and he's going to turn himself into a star player at second base as the Reds have shifted their infield around, Suarez at shortstop, Moustakas at third base, and that seems like that's going to be the lineup moving forward, and I got to tell you what, I like it a lot. All right, moving on from the Reds, I want to talk a little Cincinnati Bengals here because we're still just a few weeks removed from the 2021 NFL Draft, and the Bengals hold the fifth pick in the draft. This is going to be a very important selection for this team. Zach Taylor, Duke Tobin, the decision makers there for the Cincinnati Bengals. What do you do at number five? Now, the consensus is that the top three picks are going to be quarterbacks. Bengals obviously don't need one of them, so that's working out in their favor. The Atlanta Falcons hold the fourth pick in the draft. They don't necessarily need a quarterback, but they might be able to trade with a team that does. Or maybe they are going to select Kyle Pitts, the standout tight end from Florida. He is a guy that is on the Bengals' radar. The Bengals' kind of two choices are get Joe Burrow a weapon or get him somebody that is going to be able to protect him. Now, a lot of Bengals fans will say they need to draft Penei Sewell, the left tackle out of Oregon. He did not play this last year, sat out due to the COVID stuff going on, but everyone says that he's a generational talent at left tackle. His pro day went pretty well. They say he's got some short arms, but if you just kind of look at the measurables and what he's been able to do at Oregon in his young career, he looks like he would be a formidable player at tackle. Now, the Bengals already have two starting tackles. They plan on Jonah Williams playing left tackle and free agent signing Riley Reiff on the right. That doesn't mean that one of those guys couldn't move into guard, or if they draft Penei Sewell, he could play guard and really bolster this lineup, this offensive line, so that Joe Burrow doesn't get touched as much. That is a great idea just in general. You want your franchise quarterback to not get hit so that he can throw the ball down the field and the Bengals can score a lot of points. I get it. Penei Sewell would be a great pick. Not saying don't pick him. I have been on the Ja'Marr Chase train as Joe Burrow's former teammate at LSU was the Biletnikoff winner as a freshman in college, the best wide receiver as a freshman. He is an absolute freak of nature. He is a downfield threat. That is one thing the Bengals don't have. Tyler Boyd, a slot receiver, does not go deep. T. Higgins, who played really well as a rookie, is not necessarily a deep threat either. He's just a complete wide receiver who does a lot of great things. But Chase is a home run hitter. And there's going to be folks out there that say, well, if Joe Burrow doesn't have time to throw the ball down the field, what's it matter? And that is a great point. I understand that. My thinking is that you draft the best player available at number five overall. You don't draft for need at the top of the draft. Ja'Marr Chase, in my mind, would be the best player at number five. Maybe Kyle Pitts, if he's there. I think he's going to Atlanta with the fourth pick. So Ja'Marr Chase would be my selection. And this is a deep offensive line draft by all accords. If you read some of the reports, pay attention to the draft news. There's a lot of offensive linemen available in this draft. And with the Bengals drafting at the top of each round, they could get a really, really solid lineman at the top of the second round. So that's kind of my thinking. you can go either or. You could get the offensive lineman with the fifth pick and a playmaker at the top of the second round, or vice versa. It would work either way for the Bengals. They just need to make sure that they hit on the players that they are drafting. They have had trouble with the offensive linemen they've drafted in the past. Billy Price hasn't necessarily worked out. He was a first-round draft pick. Cedric Oboehe was a train wreck. They drafted Jake Fisher in the second round. That same year they got Oboehe. They just don't have a great track record with drafting linemen in recent memory. Even Jonah Williams, he's played well at times, but he hadn't been on the field because he's been often injured. So for my money, I take Chase, grab an offensive lineman in the second round, but I will not be disappointed or upset if they do the vice versa and draft Penei Sewell at number five and then get a playmaker for Joe Burrow in the second round. But I will tell you this, this is going to be an offense-heavy draft for the Bengals. They might sprinkle in a defensive lineman, edge rusher, or two, but I think you're going to see them take multiple offensive linemen, maybe multiple offensive weapons, and really try to build around Joe Burrow. They've really kind of built up their defense and free agency. So not as many picks going to go that way, but they still do need edge rusher for sure. So that's what you should be looking for during the NFL draft. And before I get out of here, I want to touch on the national championship game tonight between Gonzaga and Baylor. You got two number one seeds hooking up in Indianapolis tonight, Lucas Oil Stadium. Gonzaga, I've said it almost ad nauseum, they are trying to become the first team to go undefeated and win the national championship since 1976. That was Bob Knight's Hoosiers. Mike Woodson was on that team, who's going to be the new head coach in Bloomington. And Gonzaga is lucky to be in this game. Jalen Suggs hit an incredible three-point shot to win the game on Saturday night against Mick Cronin's UCLA Bruins. One of the more fantastic college basketball games that have been played in recent memory. I think the best college basketball game I've seen personally, just on TV, was back in 2005, I'll say, when Illinois was going for the national championship. They'd only lost one game in the regular season, and they played Arizona in the Elite Eight in Chicago and were down a majority of that game. I think there was only like 4 or 5 minutes left, and they were down 14, and they came back and won. It was the most incredible college basketball game I had ever seen, but this one is right up there, 93-90, overtime game with a buzzer beater like that to go to the national championship. Pretty incredible, and especially considering UCLA was an 11 seed, probably had no business being in the Final Four, but were able to get there anyways, and that was just a really enjoyable game, and they went back and forth. They just played really well, didn't turn the ball over, shot the ball well. That's my kind of basketball. I love seeing the ball go through the hoop. So Gonzaga, we'll see if they got some tired legs. Baylor made pretty easy work of Houston on Saturday, and they're looking mighty good, and I would not be surprised if Baylor won this game, but my rooting interest is with Gonzaga. I would think Mark Few is absolutely phenomenal. What he has done with that program, not playing in a power conference, getting them to be among the elite in college basketball, that man and his players deserve to be national champions, and I would love to see the Zags go undefeated and cut down the nets in Indianapolis tonight. Going to be a great game one way or another. If you're a college basketball fan, you should probably be tuned into that one, and I hope you enjoy the game. Hope you enjoyed Crunch Time as well. I always have a lot of fun doing the show. 6 to 6:30 each and every Monday evening, courtesy of our friends at OrthoSensi Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, the orthopedic authority in Lawrenceburg and throughout the tri-state. Next week, East Central head coach Jake Miners going to bring along some of his senior football players. We'll do a brief recap of the 2020 season, and we're going to talk to these young men about the colleges that they're going to go play at, and obviously talk about some of their memories playing for EC football. Going to be a lot of fun. We also have the South Dearborn esports team lined up for later on this month. We're working to get Coach Ballard and his football players in, and Coach Kaniga and his football players from Lawrenceburg in on the show as well. So a lot of good stuff coming up on Crunch Time. We hope you'll continue to tune in each and every Monday, 6 to 6:30, and don't forget to download the weekly episodes at EagleCountryOnline.com. Have a good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.